gentlemen, I welcome you to this first meeting of the Portfolio Committee in this not so new year, because the year is not so new. We ended our year last year in a note that was raising a lot of concern. And it's a pity that the DG is not here, because in my introductory remarks, I would have loved to give the DG just a picture of our last meeting with the chairpersons and deputy chairpersons of entities. It was not a good meeting at all. There are a number of issues that were raised in that meeting, and issues that I feel the department is, I don't know whether they are aware of the problems that are in the entities, or they just ignore those problems. And as honorable members, the department, officials of the department, as you are aware, that when we came in 2014, our focus, we make it clear that our focus is going to be on entities, because 80% of the budget of the department is transferred to entities. So this is what we have been doing. And as the portfolio committee, we are not happy at all with the way the department is dealing with the entities. Their oversight or lack of oversight over the entities leaves much to be desired. And this was clear in our last meeting, and I was hoping that by now the department would have received a report from its own, not from me, because I'm not employed to report to the department. I was hoping that by now a report would have been given to the department by the people who were present in that meeting. And maybe later when the DG comes, we will be able to get, if he does have the report, which is a very bad report. But without wasting time, honorable members, we have our agenda in front of us. I'm hoping that the honorable members had a restful festive season. I don't know whether there is anything like that, if you rest and be festive. But I'm hoping that, because this year is going to be a very busy and tough year for us, as we are winding up the work that we started in 2014. And as we said last year, we need JABU to have an evaluation workshop where we are going to evaluate the work that we have done. We look at what we set out in 2014 in that strategic planning session that we had in 2014, prioritizing and planning, and we need to look at how far we have gone and those areas that we have not been able to achieve anything. We focus on them during these few months that are left for us to be here. So let us have that strategic planning session and invite those people that we invited there, because we will evaluate ourselves. But I think it's important for other people to tell us what they see in the work that we're doing. So I think it's important for us to do that. We have the agenda in front of us. Are there any apologies?
Good morning, members. Good morning, everyone. We have an apology from Mamu Kozi. She will not be able to attend today. And we also have an apology from Mamu Jamin Zuma. She just indicated that she had an emergency to attend to. We also have an information that the pen house is running a bit late due to slight problems, but they're on the way. And the DG as well.
All right, the members, those are the apologies. Can we have someone moving for the acceptance of the apologies? Honorable Robert Dabney, moving for the acceptance. Honorable Zuledi is seconding. Thank you very much, honorable members. We will now introduce ourselves without wasting a lot of time because we have NEF as one of the institutions, because they are not an entity of the department, but they are an institution that is receiving funding from the department. So we will introduce ourselves. I am Oliswa Tom, the chairperson of the portfolio committee.
My name is Thomas Magondo, member of the portfolio committee.
I am Master Tuledi, the member of the portfolio committee.
Winston Rabutapi, member of the committee.
Karen Flodwom, Lieutenant Committee.
Thank you very much, honorable members. Can we have you, Jabu, the committee management, introducing yourself first?
I am Jabulile Dumisa Mthiya, I'm the committee secretary.
Good morning, I'm Theodore Clayton, I'm the research for the committee. Good morning, everybody. My name is Lindum Dukomle, coordinator for the committee. Thank you very much.
Good morning, my name is Vera Magadana, the executive secretary of the committee.
This is Johnny Kandrisi, I'm the committee secretary for the committee.
Thank you very much. Can we have introductions from the department?
Good morning, I'm Charles Mabaso, Chief Director.
Good morning, honorable committee members. I'm Sakiwo Kiso, I'm also with the Department of Arts and Culture.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Ludwig Raleviti from the Office of the Director.
Thank you very
much.
Thank you very much. Can we give over to any NEF?
I'm Lisa Mpusha, I'm the CEO of the National Employment Fund. Good morning, my name is Omar Hanile, I'm Umnotho Fund Manager.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Noctula Nkomo. I'm the socio-economic development manager at the National Employment Fund.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Chris Lowe. I'm the Western Cape regional manager for the National Employment Fund.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Chief Mwanga. I'm the
Felicia from Communication Services.
Chair, I'm Bernadette Wilson, Parliamentary Liaison Commissioner for the CRO Research. Can you tell us what that means?
Okay, Parliamentary
Monitoring Board. Yes, so that everybody is aware. Thank you very much. Our culture in the portfolio committee is that when an entity or an institution receiving money from the department comes before the portfolio committee, we ask the department to give us an overview of what that institution is doing. Reason being that we want to see that the department has its thumb on the pulse of whatever institution. But the DG, I don't know whether Kilabukhile is coming with the DG.
Yes, Honorable Chair, Ms. Setibelo should be joining us. but I think she'll be leaving a little bit early because she has a BRICS meeting that she has to chair. So she should be joining us.
Thank you very much. And because it means then that you will not have the overview, or do you have the overview? Are you able to present the overview?
No, Chair, we don't have for the NEF since it's not one of our public entities.
Okay, it then means the Galopit has to be presented. Someone has to present the overview. So we will get the overview after the presentation. And so, honorable members, can we do that? Can we have the overview after the actual presentation, because the DG is not here? So we will give over to NEF to do the presentation.
So just before their presentation, I just want to find out, Chair, whether will we be able to engage with the report after the overview or what's going to happen? Because one is interested in getting the overview from the department before we can even engage with the report. Yes, presentation can be presented, but what will happen if perhaps by that time they aren't here for the overview?
The DG is on his way. He'll be here in about can you keep on, can you keep on trying, just finding out where the DG is, so that maybe at the end of the presentation, the DG will be here. Because what we usually do is that we get the overview from the department, we get the presentation from the entity, and we ask questions, so it will be the other way around. Honorable members, are you fine with that? Thank you very much.
Thank you for this opportunity to present for the first time the work that gives us a sense of pride and joy. So I've asked my colleagues to distribute the hard copies. The hard copies, those will be the hard copies of the presentation. So, Madam Chairperson, it's similar to the presentation that was circulated, but this is color. Yes. The pictures look much better, yes. So, Honorable Chairperson, I'm accompanied by U Zama Kanyile. Zama is a CA by profession, and she's the head of UMNOCO Fund. She has been tasked with managing, she's responsible for the partnership that the National Empowerment has with the department. I'm also with Unokthula Nkomo, a lawyer by profession. She's responsible for the socioeconomic development unit. So I will show you the linkages, between that division and what the department is also trying to do. And as I said, my name is Pilisu Mthethwa. Mr. Chris Lowe is our manager for the Western Cape office. So the NEF has offices in all the nine provinces. So So, honourable members, one of the highlights that we look forward to sharing with you today is with regard to the work that we have done in partnership with the DAC to empower creative workers to become entrepreneurs. So I want us to underline that and note it, because what we are trying to do is to actually empower these creative workers or people who are involved in the creative industry to become entrepreneurs and to build companies that could actually end up becoming global players on the world stage. That's what we're trying to do. So our presentation will briefly introduce the National Empowerment Fund, because I'm sure you actually want to get a better sense and feel of this organization that has been given this mammoth task by the department. So, you know, we'll briefly talk about the work of the NEF, just briefly, the role that the NEF has actually embarked on in championing inclusive growth, and other successful partnerships that the NEF has established with other departments, such as the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. We have a partnership, similar partnership to the one that we have with the Department of Arts and Culture. We have a similar partnership with the Department of Tourism. We have a similar partnership with the Western Cape Department of Economic Development and Tourism in the private sector. So in fact, they are the ones who approached the NEF first when it comes to these partnerships that I'm going to be talking about. On slide 4, as the Portfolio Committee is aware, the NEF was created by legislation and is the only DFI in South Africa that is exclusively mandated to grow black economic participation in South Africa. So you'll find other DFIs who are doing more or less the same thing as the NEF, where they would also be driving, you know, the implementation of broad-based black economic empowerment, but we're the only ones that have that exclusive mandate. Slide 6, the NEF obviously will implement you know, its mandate through the Code of Good Practice on broad-based black economic empowerment as outlined in the Act, and we use a sector-targeted approach in developing our portfolio of investments, and these sectors will include sectors which have been identified as the key drivers of growth within the South African economy. The sectors we focus on will be the renewable energy, tourism, minerals, beneficiation, agro-processing, BPOs, and infrastructural projects. So those are the sectors that are actually identified in the industrial participation program that is spearheaded by the DTI. But in addition to these sectors, we just fund across all the other sectors of the economy. So in doing so, the NEF specifically seeks to support the initiatives of ITEP and more broadly the National Empowerment, the National Development Plan, by championing and funding the advancement of emerging entrepreneurs. We want our entrepreneurs to become black industrialists. I'm sure the honorable members would have heard about the Black Industrialist program. So we actually think that some of the projects that we have done within the arts and culture you know, space would actually fall within that categorization of moving SMEs into actually becoming you know, global players. So the government priorities that we seek to support include acceleration of economic growth and transformation, the creation of decent jobs, infrastructure in rural development, geographic spread. So when we look at transactions, we don't just invest for the sake of investing so that we can come and report to the honorable members that we have disbursed so much. We actually want to look at the long-term financial sustainability of the enterprises that we have actually funded. I will get into the challenges that we have already identified insofar as some of the work that we have embarked upon, especially within the arts and culture space, that some of those transactions they would look good on paper, but when you start testing the financial viability into the long term, you'll actually see that some of those enterprises won't survive, for more than a year. You know, they won't be around for more than a year, but I'll get into that later. So as I have said, we fund across the economic spectrum. In the view of the NEF, we're saying that, black people should not just be limited to actually creating SMEs. SMEs are good, but we need to move them from being SMEs into medium cap industries and into becoming global players. And for this reason, the NEF funds across the economic spectrum with specialist funds dedicated to supporting. We have SME fund, we call it Imbeu fund. We have the women-owned fund, which is headed by Uzama. We have a rural and community-owned businesses fund. So that fund will focus on the investments that we are doing in the rural areas. And then we have the strategic project fund that focuses on the creation and the deepening of black industrialization in South Africa. So the venture capital fund occupies pride of place as the instrument through which we are using the expertise that we have been able to hone in other sectors of the economy. So the venture capital fund relates to the partnership that we have with the DAC. And Honorable Chairperson, we also provide non-financial support. So once we have invested, we have a non-financial support. It's a suite of products, offerings that we offer to our investee companies once we have invested. So the NEF offers an array of non-financial support interventions, starting with the pre-investment function as the first point of contact through which the NEF provides product advisory services. That's where we manage the online business plan toolkit, and that's where we facilitate entrepreneurial training and incubation. So sometimes we have realized, Honorable Chairperson, that it's very difficult for our people to conceptualize the business plan, because in terms of the PFMA, we must still adhere to some of those regulatory frameworks and the corporate governance structure. So the NEF has now developed an online business plan toolkit. I don't know, it's something, you know, when you just say let's have a business plan, so when we see the business concept, you must show us the cash flow projections and all those things. You want to see the balance sheet, you want to see this. In terms of our, you know, funding requirements, some of our people will just run away. So this online business plan toolkit, it's so simple. It has been simplified, so you'll find that if you say balance sheet, assets and liabilities, it can even define it in our African languages. So it has now allowed our black-owned enterprises to access funds even from other institutions by actually tapping into that particular online. So I would actually encourage the honorable members, you know, when they have spare time, to actually go into our website and subscribe. It's an amazing tool that we have developed. So even people who are now entrepreneurs who are coming from the arts and culture side of business are actually able to use it. So that's what our pre-investment division is doing. Then we have the NES Socioeconomic Development Unit that was established to empower black people in existing transactions and other broad-based groups through various social development interventions. So where we actually involve broad-based schemes, so in the renewable energy sector, so if let's say you are involved in a renewable energy project that is worth about, you know, 1.something billion, in terms of the regulations in South Africa, we are supposed to actually use 5% of the 1 billion to empower the rural community. So that is where you be actually setting up those renewable energy projects. So the people who are living in those areas. So if you become part of these big transactions with 1 billion rand, you actually don't understand your rights as a shareholder, you know, you don't understand shareholder activism and all of those things. So what this unit does, we actually go to those communities just to empower them, educate them about what it means if we say you are involved in a transaction in a company that is listed on the JSE, for instance. What are the risks that are associated with the equities market? What are the benefits that are associated with the equities market and so on and so forth? So they will go there. Even so, it starts with the big transactions, but even in our rural investments, so like for instance, we did an investment in the Marikana area, so it's empowering the community that lives in the Marikana area. It's a partnership they have with Lonmin, but there are a lot of other things that they didn't understand about that partnership, so that's what we do. So through the post-investment unit, the NES provides ongoing portfolio management and mentorship support and is responsible for the collections as well as a legal compliance. And lastly, we have the turnaround workout and restructuring unit, which focuses mainly on the rehabilitation of our distressed transactions. Sometimes we invest in transactions and then they will actually have some, you know, financial problems. So when they fall into that category, we just move it to our turnaround and workouts. We don't say, no, those transactions must just die. We always try to resuscitate and rehabilitate them. Slide 9, from operational inception to the end of September 2017, the NEF had approved 904 transactions that are worth more than 9 billion for black empowered businesses across the country. Over 6 billion of this is capital that has gone directly into the economy. So we are certain that the department will be pleased to know that for 12 years running, the NEF has secured clean external audit opinions. So even the partnership that we have, we have to go through that whole process with the National Treasury. We were bidding like any other, you know, I know that there were a lot of DFIs who also wanted to partner with the department. To date, through our funding milestone, the NEF has supported in excess of 93,000 jobs countrywide. And once the NEF has actually moved to the IBC, because we are in the process of combining the two entities, that is, the NEF will now fall under the, there's going to be a merger, but there's a cabinet process that is currently underway. So we believe that this important national priority can only advance higher and faster once the NEF has actually moved to the IBC. The NEF has further 26 strategic and industrial projects that we have developed in partnership with our local and international partners, and those projects are valued at 28.6 billion rand, with the potential to create a further 85,000 jobs. So in the 28.6 billion and in the 85,000 jobs, some of those projects, you know, are operational as we currently speak. So those are the projects that will start from scratch with our local and international partners. We'll come up with, develop the concept, we'll conceptualize it, we'll come up with the pre-feasibility studies, feasibility, take the project all the way up to financial close. One of those, which is not far from where we are, we started a project with a group of black doctors. They had actually acquired a license to build private hospitals all over South Africa, so they got the licenses from the Department of Health. We started with a 10 million rand investment. It grew to 100 million. We took it up to 200 million, and we are happy to report that we opened the first hospital in the Strand, and that project today is worth 2.8 billion, having started with a 10 million rand investment. So it's in the Strand, it's called Busamed. So please visit that hospital, because when you go there, you know, you will actually understand that this particular sector is only dominated by the three top healthcare companies in South Africa. That's your Mediclinic, it's your Life, and Netcare. So what we did, we have introduced a black-owned company that is now, you know, rated in the top five, you know, companies that operate within the healthcare sector. But when you go to those hospitals, that was the first one. We opened another one in Johannesburg about a year ago. It gives one a sense of pride when you walk into that hospital that is 100% owned by our black doctors, the surgeons, neurosurgeons, the cardiologists, the just ordinary doctors, you know, everything is black. So that's what we refer to as a black excellence. So the other milestones, I won't go into them, but this one, I'm sure everybody participated in the Asonge Share Scheme, which remains one of the most seminal public share offers in our country. So we took our shares, we used to have an equity stake as the NEF in MTN that was worth about 3 billion rand. So we actually did a retail offer of that particular stake, and we actually sold it to about 87,000 beneficiaries who actually benefited. So we raised about 1.5 from those from that particular retail offer. So we believe that it would be, you know, a great opportunity if, as a country, we could actually come up with a lot of those retail offers. I'm sure most of you bought those shares because they were available, they were made available to the general public. So just on point, bullet point number 10, Honorable Chairperson. So because our mentorship program is making a positive difference in stabilizing our investees, over 2.5 billion has been collected in repayment. So if you look at the money that has gone out to support our enterprises, 2.5 has already come back to the NEF. So it talks to the long-term sustainability of our enterprises that I was referring to earlier. So slide 10 and 11, so it talks to the NEF role in the HC sector and existing portfolio. So allow me, Honorable Chairperson, to share a summary of some of the deals concluded by the NEF in the arts and culture sector, totaling an investment in excess of 350 million rand. So unfortunately, we were not able to apply the 20 million that we have received from the department to apply the 20 million to some of these transactions because we had not finalized the final details. So the final details will talk to things like the money, the 20 million. So if I can use the long walk to freedom, the investment that we have made in the long walk to freedom is 50 million rand. So ideally, when the NEF invested the 50 million in the long walk to freedom, some of the money went in as equity financing, some of it went in as senior debt, some of it went in as mezzanine financing. So we wanted to get clarity from the department on how these funds, because even though it's a small portion, I mean, if you look at the types of values that we are dealing with, the 1 million, if the department can say you can take 1 million from the 20 million and apply it as working capital, you can take 2 million from the 20 million that you have received from the department and apply it as a grant portion that has to go into the transaction. So what we have done, because some of these transactions are not fully dispersed, so when we disperse into the transactions, we do it in tranches. So we'll have some milestones that we'll be putting in place and say, once you have achieved this particular milestone, we'll give you the second tranche. So what we've been busy with through the workshops that we've been having with the department, we're actually clarifying those issues because we don't want to apply the funds and then the auditor general comes and say, no. This financial incentive was not supposed to go in as senior debt, but it was supposed to go in as equity. So those are the final details. But once all of these things have been finalized, we'll then be able to maybe take 1.5, you apply it to this project and so on. So Long Walk to Freedom is the movie based on President Mandela's autobiography, Long Walk to Freedom. This was produced by Mr. Anand Singh. The MEF funded $50 million towards the production, which created 799 jobs with 668 for crew and 131 for the cast. But obviously, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members will realize that you know, most of these jobs are actually temporary jobs. They were there when we were busy with the actual production. Slide 13. So here we did the Sky Rink Studios, which is a new venture started by a team of black entrepreneurs who are the owners of Dialo Web 50 and BBDM Brothers, respectively. Dialo Web and BBDM are South African companies with extensive experience in communications, in TV production, in IT, in digital media platforms, in events production. So both these companies have a history of producing TV and short films, from comedy to documentaries, and the funding that was approved by the NEF is 40 million. And 26.9 million has already been dispersed. So in this particular project, Madam Chairperson, so we did this one when we already had the 20 million from the department. So out of the 40 million that must go into this project, we have only dispersed 26.9 million. So if the Auditor General and the DG can give us a go-ahead on the financing, you know, instruments, because we have the funds, we have ring-fenced them. So what the department must say to us on the outstanding, because the difference between 40 and 26.9, the department can then say, we are happy for you to invest 500,000 into this project. So, but the NEF will say, these are some of the requirements that this particular project has. So even though we have ring-fenced the funds, those funds, you know, once we have finalized all of those things that the issues that I'm referring to, can actually be dispersed like very, very quickly. But we didn't want to proceed, even though we know that we have access to the 20 million. We want the DG to give us a go ahead. It's like finer details, but they are actually very important. So this business employs 10 permanent people, and consistent with the nature of the industry, the temporary staff will vary in accordance with the size and scale of production. Then we have Accident Films, which is a company that was established by Forefront Media Group South Africa to co-produce a film called Accident, together with Superb Films, which is a French company. The film is made up largely of a South African cast, with the exception of a German actress. The funding that has been approved is 5 million, of which 4.9 million has already been dispersed. So we are busy negotiating with the department once again to see if the difference between 5 and 4.9, if we can't take 100,000 and put it in this project as working capital. And then slide 15, we have Bongwe Productions, which is a television production company established in 2005 by Mr. Pokane. It is the third largest 100% black-owned TV production company in South Africa after Morula Pictures, that produces Generations, and Word of Mouth Pictures, that produces Movango. The NEF approved 15 million, of which 11.8 million has been dispersed. So the difference, once again, between the 15 million and 11.8 million, once the DG has, you know, given us a go-ahead on the thing, on the financing instruments that we can use with the 20 million, 100 million, or 500 million, or 1 million, can be applied to this particular enterprise. Slide 16, My Africa Films. A main business is the acquisition of film rights and production. The long-term vision and plan of the company and its shareholders is to establish a film development and production company that tells local stories that are of international quality and which can be internationally marketed. The funding that has been approved by the NEF for this project is 35 million rand. The company is 100% black owned and manages and employs 19 professionals. On Digital Media is a Greenfield venture that operates a second pay TV channel in South Africa. Its products are sold nationally by over 3,000 outlets, such as JD Group, which owns 857 stores, Massmart Group, which owns 92 stores, Ellerins and Altec Autocage with 136 branches nationally, and Pep Stores with 1,800 outlets. The total funding that has been approved for this project is 140 million rand, of which 121 million has already been dispersed. So the difference, once again, between the 140 and 121 million, so a certain portion of the difference can actually go in as equity or grant or a grant portion. The business employs 30 industrial professionals. The Black Market Media supplies, that is another company, supplies its clients with marketing solutions that are delivered, that is slide 18, delivered across different media platforms. The company services companies such as Mnet, MultiChoice, and DSTV, to name a few, as the customer base. The funding approved is 15 million. This one has already been fully dispersed, so there will be no opportunity to partner with the department on this one. The business is 100% youth-owned and employs 12 people. Then you have the Canuck Productions. Let me go to slide 20, which is Power FM. Power FM, honorable members, is a radio station which was launched on June 2013 after the company was awarded a housing-based sound broadcasting license by ICASA in December 2011. In 2017, the NEF further approved 25.7 million after we had invested the initial 50 million. So this was towards the establishment of two more radio stations, which would include Beat FM and the Free State and Rhythm FM in the Eastern Cape. The total approved for the three radio stations is 75 million rand, and 58.2 million has been dispersed. So once again, if we get a go-ahead on this one, maybe the DD can say from the 20 million, the NEF can, even if it's 200,000, it makes a big difference to our entrepreneurs. So here we're looking at the difference between 75 million and the 58.2 million. So we're saying from the 20 million, the funds that we have with the department, we could take 1 million and put it in as working capital once we have received a go-ahead from the DG. Slide 21, I have to talk about this one because it's in the Cape. It's the Cape Point Film Studios, which aims to develop the first purpose-built four-precinct sea and underwater sound stage in the Southern Hemisphere. There has been growing demand, honorable members, for production facilities of an international standard in South Africa by Hollywood producers, and Cape Point Film Studios addresses this shortfall by offering unique and niche water stage facilities that were not available in the country. So the project has great job creation potential and will assist to revive an economically depressed area in Atlantis, because that's where this particular project is, Madam Chairperson, which is here in Cape Town. So the NEF has invested 3.5 million to secure a 22% equity stake on behalf of the black beneficiaries. At financial close, the transaction will be worth $40 million. So that is about 600 million or 550, you know, about million years. So the 22% we have actually, you know, taken that equity position to acquire the stake on behalf of the black beneficiaries in the project. So NEF slide 22, enterprise development partnerships. So Madam Chairperson, here we're just saying we have entered into these partnerships with a wide range of private sector entities that are in different sectors of the economy, so we're excited about the opportunity of working with the department. So we've done it, and we believe that we have a strong track record in actually managing these partnerships. So I believe it is important to demonstrate that the NEF has a track record of success as an implementing partner in enterprise and supplier development, having collaborated with stakeholders in the public and private sectors. Through the NEF Enterprise Development Fund, our partners will contribute 40% and the NEF co-invest 60% towards the needs of our black beneficiaries. To date, participants include Bakwena, Bamukova, the Western Cape, the Western Cape Department of Economic Development and Tourism. We have a partnership with IVRAS, Highfield Steel. We have a partnership with the Laser Group, BP, Chrysler, Trans Alloys. We have a partnership with Engine, with Nando's. You know, it's across the board where Nando's, NEF will invest 50 million in a fund, Nando's will put in 50 million. So as and when they get black people who are ready to own the Nando's stores, then they actually tap into that particular fund.
But this is Bakasha, not Bakwena.
I'm sorry. My apologies. But we do have a partnership with Bakwena as well. So, honourable members, as a partner trusted by many, the NEF is happy to lend its experience and expertise across the spectrum of the sectors represented by our partners. As you saw, our total portfolio of investments over the last 10 years is actually worth more than 56 billion rand. So list of partners, slide 24 to date, as a consequence of this partnership, over 350 million has been dispersed among various beneficiaries countrywide. So those are the funds that we'll actually get from the private sector, and then we'll invest them on the 60-40 basis. 60% of the funds will go into a transaction as any expanding, and the 40% will come from our partners. Slide 25. That one of the NEFC examples of success in enterprise development is the partnership that the NEF has with the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. This came about after the Honorable Minister Nkululeko invited the NEF to become a partner in the implementation of the program called Strengthening of Relative Rights of People Working the Land, also known as the 50-50 Project. The NEF was considered a worthy partner in the project because of a range of expertise. Firstly, Madam Chair, the NEF has a track record of success in structuring startups, expansions, and equity acquisition deals. Secondly, with a dedicated rural and community development fund, the NEF possesses consummate expertise in unlocking economic value in peri-urban and rural areas. Third, the NEF is highly proficient in facilitating community and worker ownership and participation in BEE transactions. So that's why that particular program was actually transferred to the NEF. On the next slide, you'll actually get just a list of projects that the NEF has partnered with the department on, and the total value of the total value of those transactions is estimated at 1.4 billion rand. So the first 800 million has already been transferred by the Department of Rural to the NEF. So in this next financial year, the Department of Rural will be disbursing another 1 billion rand so that we can then start implementing the next list of those particular projects. Slide, then I've spoken about the Western Cape, then slide 30. Slide 31, this is just for your bedtime reading so that you can also refer black entrepreneurs who are not maybe necessarily involved just in arts and culture but in other areas to the NEF. We just wanted to give you a sense of what the NEF is all about. So slide 31. So Madam Chairperson, in terms of our agreement with the DAC, you are aware that the department through the Mzansi Gold and Economy has a total of 3 investment arms that cover the full spectrum of the sector through the provision of grant and debt financing. So as the honourable members are aware, the NES is contracted to help unlock the implementation of the Venture Capital Fund based on our strategic and operational expertise in corporate finance and enterprise development and sustainable investment. So through our partnership, we seek to support established practitioners requiring startup and expansionary finance in order to become torchbearers in the arts and culture sector. Slide 34. So this relationship dates back to 2016 when the Department of Arts and Culture appointed the NEF through a tender process that was overseen by the National Treasury to manage the Venture Capital Fund for 3 years with an allocated budget of 20 million rand for the 2016-17 financial year. So the fund seeks to redress past imbalances by addressing the lack of financing instruments for the creative industries, contributing to economic growth and creation and the creation of jobs in South Africa. The loan begins with, it starts from 250,000, so which is good because we are trying to cater for, you know, the up and coming black owned SMEs that are coming from this particular industry. So if there's anyone, honorable members, who's better placed to expound on the value of arts and culture in society, it is this very committee. I'm sure we'll be learning from yourself, but we're saying this is the little that we have achieved so far as the National Empowerment Fund. But what has attracted the NEF to this partnership and in accordance with our mandate is the need to see black people becoming the benchmark and primary beneficiaries in a growth sector that defines the pulse and the DNA of our nationhood. As the sector's net contribution to GDP continues to grow, the NEF wants those entrepreneurs that we were referring to earlier on and many, many others to also become, you know, part of that growth trajectory and part of that growth story. So, honorable chair, I'm going to hand over to Ms. Zama Kanyile, a vibrant chartered accountant. So don't listen to people who say we don't have enough black chartered accountants in South Africa. We do. Whose investment fund at the NEF is incubating the Venture Capital Fund to take us through the trends, analysis and socioeconomic impact, and to take us through the new deals that we now have in our portfolio. Those are the new transactions that we are currently looking at. The ones, the transactions that I have already presented on are the transactions that have already been concluded. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll start off just by highlighting why the arts and culture sector is deemed important in society. So we've observed over the years that culture and creativity is a cement that binds not only the heart, but also societies, nations, even during tough economic and even political times. In 2014, when we looked at the macroeconomic impact of the sector, we found that 90.5 billion rand came from the sector, which was 2.9% at the time. And this went to creating 562 job opportunities, 45% of which is semi-skilled and labor, therefore really hitting the lower end of the market and contributing towards poverty alleviation and reducing unemployment among those who are previously disadvantaged. Arts and culture also contributes to social cohesion and sustains the country's heritage. Its impact on capital, gross capital formation is 114 billion per year. The impact on household income is 69.9 billion rand. These are the salaries that reach the poor communities in South Africa. The impact on the fiscus is 24.4 billion through direct and indirect taxes, which provides government with revenue that it can use to improve the quality of life of South African citizens. Its impact on the balance of payments is a positive 35.7 billion rand per year. The next slide just shows on a high level the different, call it, domains that make up the arts and culture sector. You've got the performing arts or performance celebration. You've got the visual arts and craft, the audiovisual and interactive media, design and creative services, and then information, press, and books and press. You'll see that those domains exclude the museums and monuments, because through our engagements with the department and understanding the purpose of this fund, given the amount of money that is available to us, the 20 million rand in the first year, that is not sufficient to fund such type of activities as a museum and monuments, because the monuments themselves don't have a direct income generating aspect, even though they bring tourism, but the actual monument is not a revenue driver that one can derive a repayment as this fund is structured. In analyzing these different subsectors, we also identified some dominant market failures. These relate to limited access of finance for SMEs. So the size of the business usually limits the ability to raise commercial bank finance because they don't have collateral, and there's also usually a history of a lack of historical financial performance. So someone has a product, but there's no indication that one can place reliance on that this particular craft or particular product is actually able to generate profit and repay a loan in the long run. We also realized that the businesses rely on government grants, and this is not sustainable. One, the type of businesses that would approach the Department of Arts and Culture, they would approach it based on a project basis. So they're looking to execute one project during the year, but then we ask questions about sustainability. So we find that we have to help them think about, beyond this one big project, what are the other revenue drivers that you can tap into for the balance of the year. And also, if you give people a grant, the only accountability is to really report back on how the money was spent and not necessarily driving up profits. So if you give them funding that, you know, should be paid back, even if it's at 0%, there is a responsibility on them to drive up the revenue and also at the same time control their costs so that they can make enough profit to repay. And in that way, you're slowly but surely building strong business people within the arts and culture sector. I've mentioned the once-off revenue, once-off nature of the revenue stream, and also there's lack of supply chain and finance. So you find people have been given contracts to execute certain projects, but they don't have the money up front to pay the deposits. If it's a performance, they don't have the money for the fees to book the venues and so forth. So this is how we envision that this fund will play a role in this sector. The next few slides I'll go through also quite quickly, but the whole purpose is to illustrate the value chains within the different streams. So we looked at music and performance celebration, and we look at what is the artist's share and what is the value chain and where do black people play in these value chains within the different streams. So if you take a CD sale, and my apologies to the committee because when we converted to PDF we lost some of the values, but I'll talk to the contents. I think one can see that if you look at how the pie chart is split, you've got about 6% going to the writer of the song and the actual creative behind it. You've got almost 40% going to the music store. So if you look at who actually makes money when you pay for that CD at the music store, it's mostly the music store followed by the record label, and then the government has its portion by way of taxes and VAT. And the portion that goes to the creative is actually minimal. So given this trend and what we've observed with the advent of online media and music being available via MP3s and the music platforms, there's been a shift in global trends to push the model away from DCD sales to also incorporating a mix of the live performances, which then gives the participants a better experience to interact with said artists. So if you look at the movements in the trends globally between local and global, since 2009, if you look at locally, you know, money from local music shows was 700 million rand, but in 2016 this moved to 1 billion. globally as well, this has grown. So there is this real shift towards an interaction between the artists and the people that consume their craft. If you look at the table on the bottom left, you'll see also the shift from physical distribution of music to digital distribution. But also what we observe there is that the live music once again has picked up in terms of the consumption. So our focus is to then see how do we penetrate the value chain within the live performances space, not only to have people that put on good concerts and performance celebrations within the arts and culture sector, but that black people participate in other areas of the value chain. So on slide 40, you will see the split of how a live music festival is funded. So up top, the first table is what is a music festival or a performance celebration that would have local artists. At the bottom is one that would also have foreign artists. So you see a lion's share of the actual project cost goes towards artist fees. So in live music performances, this is also more of a fruitful or a financially beneficial exercise because of the actual project, they're actually able to derive more revenue. If you look at local artists, 31% of the project cost would go to the artist fee, but the second largest expenditure goes towards equipment, which is sound, stage and lighting. And this is where we've realized there's a gap where black people can play and aren't necessarily playing a role in this space. It goes the same with the international artists where you see once again it's the artist fees and then second is the equipment. So we're trying to help create black entrepreneurs that provide the sound, stage and lighting equipment to a number of players in the industry. We also observe the demographics in trying to identify where the funds should be channeled in how we split the monies that we receive from the Department of Arts and Culture. So the pie charts may not have the values, but if you just look at the tables below it, you'll see that if you look at overall the participants in the arts and culture sector, it's 52%. But if you drill down, the 52% of black ownership actually doesn't have the majority of the economic share. From a gender perspective, the industry is male-dominated, with 69.9% being male players. And from age demographics, you'll see that only 34% of the players in this sector are youth. So our focus is to then offer this fund primarily with a focus on empowering women and also including women-owned enterprises in this space as well. The provincial dynamics on slide 43 also illustrates that the major economic nodes in terms of the provinces, being Gauteng, Western Cape and KwaZulu-Natal, really drive most of the performance, and hence our approach to have a targeted go-to-market exercise where we go through the other regions and focus even on the rural areas and the township communities to get them to participate more in this sector, because the arts and culture is a sector that is consumed across gender divides, racial divides, and also income levels as well. From an employment and numbers creation perspective, Gauteng dominates once again, and hence we want to ensure that there's economic activity across all the regions so that jobs can be created across the various sectors. One of the drivers that helps us in actually identifying what we call the empowerment dividend at the National Empowerment Fund and what others call as the socio-economic benefit is looking at how many jobs the funding can unlock. So in our analysis, the average cost per job in the arts and culture sector is 160,000 rand. We also looked at the different sources of income within the arts and culture sector. So 39.5% receives government grants as a source of income, and 57% is derived directly from sales, including royalties, and the remainder is 4% from other donors. So you'll see that really outside of direct sales and government grants is really the majority financier in this space, and hence we need to get some of the arts and culture practitioners away from that model into more of a sustainable model where their businesses can eventually attract funding from commercial financiers. We also looked at the different contributions per cultural domain, with fashion design and architectural services being the highest contributor to employment. Performance and celebration, such as festival and events, and the performing arts was the second highest contributor to employment, and also visual arts and crafts as a third contributor to employment. So with that being said, I'll just focus on the planned allocation per domain. So this goes to the arts and culture sectors. I'm now on slide 45. So the bulk of our money we envision will go towards the performance and celebration subsector, understanding that we want to create players in the equipment provision space. And the second highest will go to the audiovisual, which is the movie and film, which creates a lot of jobs and also boosts tourism in the long run, and also the television broadcasting facility. Over to the CEO. On slide 47, we received a total of 34 applications. Three have been approved, five are at due diligence, and seven at screening. So the screening process is the initial process before we go out on due diligence, where we engage with the customers, the suppliers, the entrepreneurs in detail on site at their premises, understanding robustly and kind of comprehensively the business proposal at hand. You'll observe that we did have a high level of decline, but these declines are not at face value. So some were declined before DD, because DD being due diligence, because they just didn't have that economic merit. But for those that we felt we could unlock some value, we did walk the journey with them and concluded due diligence. So that's pretty straightforward. The next two pages is just a breakdown between of the actual pipeline that we received. Takeaway points is that it's mostly for music festival and then the film and production sector. We're proud to actually report back on one of the deals that we've approved and also subsequently dispersed recently that will create 98 jobs. It's called it's a movie called So the Winter to My Skin, produced by Yellow Bone Entertainment. This is a youth-owned entity with majority women ownership and producers that have done well to put South Africa on the world map, and they've been invited to participate at Cannes just on the script and not even before the movie has gone into production, which is something that's an anomaly in the sector and speaks to the talent that the rest of the world sees in South Africa.
So, honourable members, this just gives you the high level. These are the highlights. So I don't know whether you want us to go through the transactions that are in the DD stage.
I can hear.
So I was saying, this is like at a broad level. This is what the NEF has been filled with. But now we can get into the details of the transactions that are in the pipeline, because the ones that we have presented have already been approved. But as I said, we were not very clear in our minds as to whether we could utilize the 20 million and apply it to the transactions that I was talking about earlier. So the DG, I'm sure we'll talk to those issues because we have had our workshops. What we're worried about, Madam Chairperson, was a situation where the 20 million could be used up in just maybe five transactions. So which is why we're saying let's get that clarity. So once we get a go-ahead from the DG, then we should be able to apply, you know, a little bit of this financing, grant funding, you know, that will be coming from the DAC. That will be coming from the DAC court. So the next slides are talking about what we currently have at a DD stage. Those are the transactions that we are conducting the due diligence on. So do you want to get a feel of those as well?
Yes.
Okay.
So the first, slide 51 is a Moody called formula
that I'm looking to raise 12.2 million rand. They've already received DTI grants and also a portion of soft funding from the NSVF. From the NES, they're looking at 5 million rand. I think for the purpose of maybe going through these, I'll just summarize. The next one is the state enemy number one, where the team now is conducting due diligence, but you'll see that sometimes the entrepreneur will engage with an MNIST, but the terms are not favorable. They favor MNIST and the entrepreneur makes enough money to just cover salaries and doesn't actually see a real return. So the team is engaged in discussions there to better structure those contracts with MNIST. Fusebox has two productions in the line, one being a 13-episode TV series and the other being a movie. Ergo Company is the last one, looking for finance and looking for 2.1 million from the NEF. The CEO has already spoken to Bongwe Productions, which successfully repaid its first loan, is on track with the other loan and has met drawdown conditions to tap into the balance of the funding, hence the request that we had put out to say, can we put some of the DAC money towards that project? Similarly with Skyring Studios, which is also in line with the rejuvenation of the Johannesburg precinct and promoting arts and culture in that sector. They have now finished the studios and are finishing up the editing facilities in February and are in negotiations to produce Isidingo there as an anchor client. Kaskop Gorgelift is... Okay. So Kaskop Gorgelift company is a black-owned entity in the in Mpumalanga. So along the panorama tourist route, the NEF, Mpumalanga is renowned for its natural beauty, and in the gorge is actually a lift that sits elevated above the ground. So it'll be covered in glass and it'll be a tourist attraction, and people can go down into the gorge using that facility. So it's a nice draw for local international tourists. Slide 55. In Mpumalanga, which is the tourist attraction on page 55. So with the international draw,
can we ask the presenter to be at our level? Because I think it's not only you, all of us, we're on the same page, because she said we must go to page 51, and then when she was moving, she left us behind, and she was moving so fast. Can she really try to be within our level so that we have an understanding? Thank you.
To the committee. I'm on page 55 and I'm dealing with the first half of the page on page 55, and that is the Kaskop Gorgelift. Maybe I'll go back. So it's a tourist attraction in the Mpumalanga tourism sector. So with the draw from the local and international tourists, there's curio shops where arts and culture practitioners have space to produce and sell their ways, and we are empowering 15 women through that project. The Cape Point Film Studio, which is on the same slide, 55. Okay.
Chair, I'll allow Philly Gomo to speak to the project.
Okay, thank you, Chair, and to the honourable members. What has happened is there are women who were operating from the site before the court was built. So they've been adopted to be part of the project. It's 15 women from the area in Graskop, and already they are operating, selling to the tourists because the site was opened in December 2016. So they are already operating, and we are assisting them to get some funds to diversify their products in the area for the international market especially. Thank you.
Honourable Chair, through you, this is just part one of the project. This is one of the projects that were concluded through the Strategic Project Fund. So phase two includes the erection of a hotel in the area, which will bring more tourists and more opportunity to explore arts and culture opportunities in that sector. On slide 56 is a list of the already invested portfolio, where the lodges are already running operational. So we see this as low-lying fruit for Rhino Ridge, Safari Lodge, Royal Tonga Game Lodge, Tala Game Reserve, and Jozini Tiger Lodge to be recipients of this Arts and Culture Fund as well, because they operate in the tourism space and they are really arts and craft practitioners providing space, providing products to these already invested entities. So our proposal is that the money goes towards those practitioners to go and procure whatever raw material they need to make their wares, and then provide a space through the Royal Tonga Safari Lodge, Rhino Lodge, Tala, and Jozini Game Lodge as well. On slide 57, I'll go through the challenges that we've observed that are experienced by players in this space. There's lack of funds and insufficient budget, and the proposal is to offer these preferential funds to make the transactions more viable, because the cost of debt, of course, the interest charge, would be lower than what they could get anywhere else in the market. There's inconsistent or unreliable businesses. Our solution is to provide the guidance during and pre-DP on how these businesses can generate sustainable revenue streams. In some cases, there's lack of government support in unlocking some of the blockages, and the NEF uses its networks with its existing portfolio and will extend that assistance to these clients to engage with government stakeholders to rally support for intervention. The operational costs are too high, and this is where the guidance on how to run sustainable business flows when the due diligence is being carried out, and the investment professionals will then impart that knowledge on how to manage those. The businesses are usually not well marketed and have very little exposure, so we proactively create access to market by leveraging relationships. So the examples are the lodges that I've mentioned, and also the Frasco Gorge Lift, where in our interactions with the entrepreneurs, we identify a space for these people to play and negotiate that they would have and those opportunities afforded to them. They are unable to buy or update the equipment, machinery, or material. So during our due diligence process and using our expertise, we would conduct buy versus lease analysis and advise on which is appropriate. And when assets must be bought, we are providing preferential funding to reduce the debt burden of the company. So in terms of the strategic solutions we've identified to boost activity in this portfolio, the first one is to secure the services of a heritage and arts and culture experts who will assist with business development and broadening networks and opportunity scoping. Sorry, I'm on slide 58. We also identified an opportunity to engage with Legends in Music, Arts and Crafts, the Theatre and Film to get a panel going in order to gain experts into opportunities that exist, the challenges that are there and how one can overcome those, but moreover to promote a culture of mentorship and skills transfer, because we have a lot of stalwarts in South Africa that
have a lot of knowledge, but how do we retain that knowledge beyond their physical existence here on Earth? We are engaging with the state theatres and their provisional equivalents, the Vid Theatre, AFTA, and so forth, to identify the young players in the arts and culture sector that can be supported for growth. We are in the process of also appointing a standing panel of service providers who will then assist with fine-tuning those business propositions and assessing the financial viability and packaging of the deals where we see that there's an opportunity for this thing to succeed, but the entrepreneur is not at the level where on their own they can present a viable business case. Through the Strategic Project Fund, we will use our project development expertise to identify and develop a few entrepreneurs. One of these examples is in the lighting, sound, and stage equipment, so that they can also participate in the lucrative sectors, so as to create an ecosystem of black players across the value chain. And lastly, we want to analyze the sales and distribution function within the various arts and culture domains to see ways in which we can provide access to market for black players in the sector. Thank you.
So in conclusion, Madam Chairperson, we do the work that we do at the NEF because the creation of sustainable jobs is the national strategic imperative that has the potential to reduce poverty and inequality and to grow our country's economy. What this partnership offers for us is the possibility to define and celebrate the journey of our country's nation building by placing the arts at the center of black entrepreneurship and black people at the head of the queue. So we therefore value and appreciate this partnership, and we view it as the golden thread in telling the story of hope. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you very much for this wonderful presentation. I think your presentation was well prepared and it has a lot of information and it has opened our eyes in some areas. You know, I think it's very important that you know that we appreciate your presentation. And as we said earlier, that the department has to give us an overview. But by just listening to the presentation, DG, it's like deja vu that I've been in this place before, where the department would implement and plan afterwards. This is what this department does. It starts by implementing and plan later. And this is totally unacceptable because at the end of the day, in some instances, you leave the people who you give the money to in a space that is not acceptable because they have the money, they can't use it, you've given them the money, but they don't know exactly how they use the money. This is totally unacceptable, and you know what I'm talking about. That there are instances where the department does this, and this must stop immediately. If you need to give funding to anybody, you need to, there needs to be a process where you sit down and clarify exactly why you are giving. Because I can't sit with the funding, with the need out there so much, you know. So now, the institution has to wait for you. The money is with them, but you're still discussing how this money should be dispersed. This is not acceptable at all. And before you came in, Gigi, I was saying that, let me say first that we did get your apology that your flight was delayed. We know that flights are being delayed this day. So your apology was accepted. We did talk a bit about the meeting that we had, our last meeting, and we don't know whether you did get a report from that meeting. And for the committee, that meeting was very, it's a meeting that
did not reach a conclusion, a good conclusion. And I tried to call you. I sent an SMS saying, please, did you call me if when you have a minute? Because I wanted to brief you, because that was a very hot meeting that we had, our last meeting. Just wanting to brief you about what was discussed there. But unfortunately, you did not come back to me. But I hope that Philippe did give you. We are now going to allow you to give an overview, and then thereafter we will ask questions. And as you give your overview, please tell us the process, you know, that led to this, and how, as the the process that led to the agreement and what the agreement is actually saying, and the if you maybe the institution will itself give us their process of how people apply and that stuff later, but I'm giving you an opportunity to give a presentation.
Honorable Chair and honorable members, I truly apologize for arriving when the meeting has started. And then, Chair, I will make sure that not as I'm informed, firstly, it's not acceptable. I'm really not sure what happened between my phone, but I will not give an excuse for that. I will make sure that gets corrected by myself. It can't be right not to answer the form. Honorable Chair, the presentation is available, but maybe allow me to just take you through, because I think most of the matters have been addressed by the CEO and her team. But starting with the first thing is an understanding of what the venture capital is and what we wanted to do. As a department, there was a gap or a problem identification that was done in relation to access to finance and loans for the projects that are ready by young, independent entrepreneurs, but they have nowhere to go to get or access the loan. So there was then a need to say, to address that problem, what can be done? Now, the DFIs and development funding institutions were identified, but the process was that this went through ADMET process. And then NEF was successful based on the proposals they had made on how they can make the vision of accessing finance at a low interest rate, but on bankable projects can be done. So that was the basic idea, that you have low interest rates, you provide these loans at that level for particularly the young developing entrepreneurs with clear arts and culture sector focus programs. Now, at that stage, when then that tender process was happening, then NEF was appointed, and that was in September 2016. As was indicated. I'm going to just summarize based on the question you provided. Then in September, which means this relationship now is a year and 3 months, if I can just put it that way, effectively. So out of that, then there was an agreement that the proposal will split the money. The department will then have over 3 years as a pilot and engaging with Treasury on how this project can work. And there was that process of engaging with Treasury just to advise on the venture capital strategy that the department was having. So then Treasury made some recommendations in relation to how we can best, but also that this then is treated as a pilot to see if it can work. Two, that the department must then have people who will work closely with the venture capital. The memorandum of understanding was then made, which is not available here, unfortunately, but can I commit that it will be sent? Or I just get someone to send it while we are here, so that the chairperson can receive it. Now, the MOU terms and conditions, among other key things that dealt with, was that the department will make a contribution of 40%, in which then NAF will contribute 60%. That translated over 3 years to say 50 million rands in year one, 50 million rands in year two, and 50 million rands in year three. Now, that is why then the department firstly had to transfer that 20 million, and the 30 million is still outstanding, it's not yet transferred to any. When then that was the first basis for the relationship, to say there will be that split, that we give so much, then we, from NEF, they also then provide. In other words, then it's a value add that they will need to make, so that it's not just the state money that goes into that account. The second issue was that there will then be a steering committee that will be established between venture, between NEF and the department, which will then be able to monitor progress and provide strategic direction on the project. The third component was that there will be reports on quarterly basis by NEF on the progress based on the account that relates to this particular project. So the department then seconded one person to work with NEF to make sure that the project is set up and the project will then be able to run, but take into account the needs of the arts and culture sector, because the gap that was there was clear that NEF has not yet dealt with that in terms of what we were placing as a department, but they have been running a number of other projects on arts and culture as I presented. But on this relationship, to make sure that we work with them and there is someone who provides that advisory role on what the department needs in terms of to achieve around all these projects. Then the issue was, Chair, how do we get hold of the applicants? On that scope, there is the NEF normally do not make newspaper adverts and all those things. So there was a need for the department to agree with the NEF that we look at marketing this project on national newspaper, because people are not aware. When they analyze the uptake, the uptake was very, very low. The money was not moving. And if you look at the level of decline, it is a great concern that people apply but are not really aware of what are the fundamental requirements. So they make business cases and business proposals which at the end of the day do not meet the standard expected of them in terms of the bar set by NEF. So on my arrival, based on that analysis, we then had several meetings with NEF and a workshop. In the workshop, there were a number of barriers that were identified that makes us not to achieve the outcome we want. At that time, only two, at least now it's three, that have been approved. But if you look at the analysis of decline before due diligence work, because the issue was that you cannot have a project that is not bankable, if I can put that way, because you will be throwing the money of the state away. So they have to do due diligence once they receive proposals and analyze whether this project is going to really succeed or not. So most people then do not succeed once they get to that stage of due diligence. It's too many of them. One of the things was then that the solution, the other issue was that maybe 5% chairperson of the interest rate is what these people can then have rather than the competitive banks, commercial banks interest rate that are charged on these loans so that people can be able to repay that. That was one of the key requirements. So the non-financial support that is required now, if we go check on this presentation, you will see that at the time, if you look at, do we have the presentation on the project? But if you look at the slide then of NEF check, slide 48, if you look at those projects and you look at the rate of approval and then you compare that to those that are at the due diligence, CD stands for due diligence, and then you look at those that are being screened and non-financial support that is required. By non-financial support, it means they have looked at the proposal, but it's clear that maybe these people need to be supported. But if it's not on the contract, that they can first assist these people to make these proposals of theirs be bankable, then it would be a problem. So there was proposal that non-financial support should be something that we consider and we allow a flexibility on the MOUA for them to do. If you go to the next slide, 49, it shows you now the bed story about why this is not moving. People apply, but look at the level of declines. So our meeting and the workshop that was held both in November and early December had to find a solution to this problem. So what we agreed was one, that there must be a person who is an expert in or who has very knowledge, deep knowledge about arts and culture to be able to work with NEF to unlock this potential and to assist them as they do their financials and everything else, but someone with a content knowledge. Three was that then we look at expanding the scope of what is covered, because all along NEF was focusing more on limited scope of the understanding of arts and culture. But after the workshop, various domains were highlighted to them which could be able to benefit from the project. The third thing was the issue of marketing and advocacy. We need to change the text and the strategy and have using provincial-based approach to visit the areas and be able to provide requirements as well as run mini workshops before people apply, so that we are able to guarantee what both Shay is correct, the word deja vu is correct. I think while there was a thinking about this thing, but because it's a pilot, maybe we ran to do more. Unfortunately, practice taught us differently, in that we need to change the approach. But the third thing was, there was a discussion about whether we need to cap the 5 million so that the grant, even if we put in 20 million, NEF puts 30, like for this financially, that is what should be the approach. But now there was a debate, apparently in the department about NEF, do we give a cap that says move only up to a project that saves 5 million and is bankable. Now, that is a problem, which we then clarified in our meeting with the NEF to say we can't have a cap, although department has suggested that to see that as many people as possible. But if it's a pilot, you're going to decline a 5 million 200 rand. Yet it's a potential to succeed a young entrepreneur. So for now we said, let us look at all projects that are bankable and we remove the cap. So you might then, instead of having 8 successful bidders, you end up with 5. But if those are projects that can work, then let it be. Let it be. So Chairperson, that is then, in a nutshell, the processes that were followed. Unless colleagues who were there, Charles is here, they would like to add if I left anything. But in my effort to understand what happened here, why do we have such a low uptake, what strategies we need to put in place to then improve the uptake, that is where we are.
Thank you. Let us give all our members an opportunity to ask questions, and I think maybe out of the presentation that you sent to us, we can ask questions as well because we've gone through the presentation. But I think what I was saying earlier was that the CEO, if you had listened carefully, was saying that we do have the 20 million, but we're still waiting for the department to okay what we want to do. Am I right?
Yes.
Because this is why I'm saying it's like, you know, this is how the department operates, having, implementing, and then planning. And it doesn't go that way. You have to plan and implement after that. So, honorable members, I'm giving you an opportunity to ask questions and to make comments. My other, it's not a concern, but it's a question. Don't you have an entity that deals with filling in the department? Don't you have something like that? And Gilbert, I think the department needs to explain to us what this is about. And the last time we met with NSBF, they were going to talk to DCI about the film unit that is within DCI to talk about. So if you can tell us, because we don't need duplication, we need to have an integrated way of doing our work. Honorable member, Honorable Makondo.
No, thanks, Chair. We welcome the presentation by National Empowerment Fund together with the department. I want to start where you left, Chair, when you say the department has got a serious challenge of planning. I think you are raising it correctly during the beginning of this year. We have been raising it since 2014, and that has not changed. I just hope that the DG will understand that there is a need for planning in the department for programs to move. When I was going through this presentation just 2 days ago, I then asked myself, was there a need for department to transfer this money to MEF when you have got your national film and video policy. That is in the industry. I understand the footprint that the National Empowerment Fund has made into the sector. There are a number of projects which I know that they have funded, which are successful. But I then ask the question, what then becomes the role of National Film and Video Foundation in the space? Because that is an entity of the department with that particular responsibility. Then I said I was going to raise this issue with the department. I understand the National Empowerment Fund is doing a very good job, but how do you bring the National Film and Video Foundation into the space? Because we know that there are a number of initiatives that they've done in the country in terms of the space when it comes to that. Taking into consideration that this venture capital can assist in other areas where National Film and Video Foundation it's not its space. But how do you bring that into the picture in that particular area? The other issue is, how do you then bring this venture capital fund into being without actually having a proper relationship between yourself and the National Empowerment Fund? Because in the main, that is the problem. Why this money has been there, it's not being used, and our people are waiting there to access this money. And every time, National Empowerment Fund will have to get a go-ahead from you. That is disservice, according to me. You create something to achieve a particular objective, but also you block it yourself. It doesn't make sense to me. The other issue is, how do you then, as a department, assist together with the National Empowerment Fund? I had an experience just 2 years ago with Land Bank. And I think it's something that is lacking with the National Empowerment Fund. To have FGIs in South Africa that are supposed to meet people that they want to help halfway, rather than stationed in their offices, you submit an application, they decline it on the basis that the business plan is not bankable. How do we then begin to have FDIs that are able to meet you halfway and be able to identify areas where you are in short of, and they assist you? At least I've seen that in Land Bank. They're doing that exceptional work, especially their provincial divisions. Because that's where people are. Rather than frustrating me, making an application, it's declined. Then go back, resubmit, declined. It does not make sense. I think we're supposed to be a developmental state that's supposed to assist, intervene in areas where we have got challenges, particularly in the areas of skills with our people. I think we have got a serious problem generally as government of not working with the people. The last question that I have, Chair, is according to the department, since you have established this capital, I mean this venture capital fund, are you practically telling us that there are no benefits out of it since it was established? And if there are any, what are those benefits? So that we understand. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. Honourable Member. No more questions. Maybe the NEF, maybe if you can just respond to this question, are there any beneficiaries presently, people who have benefited from this money that is from the Department of Agriculture? Just answer yes or no so that we can.
Yes, they are.
I think the question that the Honourable Member has asked, you'll respond to. Have you noticed the question?
Yes, Chair, what are the benefits of the venture capital fund that have been
offered? Yes, and also if you can clarify for the members of the portfolio committee, the process, your process, how do you get applications, how do you market yourself, and what is the process? They apply, you sit, how long does it take, what percentage do you charge? What's the interest rate that you charge? And I think what was said earlier about your marketing strategy, there are people, for instance, I have an example of a person in my province that got a tender, a young lady got a tender, but she's struggling to get money. A young lady who is in fashion design, who is doing a lot of good work, but she's struggling. I don't know whether she knows about you. And Nama, I never thought that I should advise her to apply to you. You know? So your marketing strategy is very important. Can you respond to those questions? I'll give another round.
So, Chair, in terms of the approved transactions to date and who has benefited from this funding, we mentioned Yellow Bone Entertainment, which is a youth-owned film production that has received an invitation to participate in Cannes Film Festival in France. Through that entity, there's two black shareholders, one female, one male. And we are creating 98 job opportunities through this initiative. There was also TICO Events and Management.
How much did you, from the amount?
Okay. So in terms of the total project cost of 16 million rand, what they came looking for from the NEF was 3.5 million rand. But according to the 40-60 split, we gave 1.4 million from the Department of Arts and Culture Fund at 5% interest according to the current MOU as it stands. And the balance of it, the 2.1 million, is what they call a venture capital loan, because movies, you can't time it for a fixed repayment. You have to wait until it goes to the screen, then you agree how you split that that income. So that's regulated by a number of agreements that when the money comes in, there's a managing agent that manages the split in terms of who shares in the money that comes in. So that's the one transaction. The other one is TICO Events Management. They put on a local music festival last year. The total project cost was 1.3. According to the 40-60 split, 513,000 rand was disbursed from Department of Arts and Culture Fund. The balance was from normal NEF funding, Chair, and that created an excess of 100 job opportunities
for that particular event. The next is our Black Planet Trading Enterprise, which is a CMT, which is cut, make, and trim.
Can I ask a question, a follow-up? As an honorable member, if there are any follow-up questions because of time, we need to ask it immediately. If I'm going to, I'm having a festival and I apply, when am I supposed to pay back the money?
Oh, there we go, sorry. So if you've got a festival, the important thing is timing. You must approach us early so that we can give you money to market the project well in time. And that was one of the flaws that happened. The guy didn't approach us well enough in time to advertise and build up excitement and momentum in terms of take-up. But how we ensure that we get the money back, one of the conditions is that they must sell through a reputable ticket sales agent. So let's say that ticket sales agent is CompuTicket. We sign a session agreement. So when CompuTicket gets the sales of the proceeds, they send it to repay the financier. The financier withholds what's due to them, and whatever is left over then goes to the project promoter in those cases.
Okay, then. If the process is in Bofimba, what happens? We can't sell to CompuTicket.
Yes. Okay, Chief, so in those cases, we have to look at the controls over the cash element, because you'd agree no one's going to pay EFT and be swiping their debit cards. So we'd have to make sure that there's sufficient cash control on site. We've got experience with those because through our service station portfolio, there is an element of cash. So we'd recommend a cash management for security companies that collect and manage the cash so that you make sure it's secure. And we can then have access to those monies. Okay. So the process goes as follows. We receive a business plan or a proposal. We do what we call a desktop assessment. That is the screening process. That is to make sure, one, it fits within our mandate, it's economically viable, the market can be accessed, there's technical expertise, there's sufficient, the management team or the jockeys, the right person behind, and this is just a high-level desktop study, interacting with the client because of resources. Then if we establish that this thing actually can proceed to the next level, we then propose a due diligence. And hence I found it important to highlight which ones had been declined after due diligence, because that means that the team actually went out and met with the suppliers, engaged the clients of those customers, their suppliers, and thoroughly looked through the contracts that underpin everything. And then after that, got to the conclusion that given the information I had, this will still not be a viable opportunity, and in understanding the responsibility to return and grow the capital that comes from the states, then those end up being declined if certain things cannot be concluded or rectified by the entrepreneur. But in terms of handholding, we do a lot of handholding, and yesterday I gave an example of how we and the CEO touched on it. The community in Marikana, they came to us with a contract for 500 million rand for bus transportation services for non-renowned employees. Now, anyone can get excited about a five-year contract amounting to 500 million rand. It sounds like a lot of money. But the community did not have the wherewithal to really unpack the contract in terms of what it meant to execute, the skills required, and what kind of production schedule they needed on the back end. When we did the numbers, we saw that it didn't make sense. That's part of the handholding. So we went back and negotiated with the decision makers at Lonmin, and we increased that contract from 500 million to 870 million because that's the only point at which it would deliver sufficient value to the community. So those are the advisory or handholding processes that we engage in when we do the pre-investment support, because all of those things happened before we actually approved the transaction. We were still getting it to a place where it can be palatable for our committee. So it would go through the screening process. So we'll sit, it's usually that takes a week. If all the information is sufficient, we can sit within a week, and then the team will go out on site and conduct the detailed getting into the depth, because they need to come back and sell this investment case to the committee and have the depth and breadth of the knowledge so that when they get posed difficult questions, they can answer them at investment committee. So it's robust. And what we say is the due diligence process is actually value-adding for the entrepreneurs as well, because they come out enriched on the other side. There are things that we ask them that they haven't even thought about in respect of how they can successfully run their businesses. So some will come back and actually thank us for helping them fortify and, you know, make this asset sustainable. After we've come back from the due diligence, we write our report and we report back to committees. We've got different levels of approving committees. So one approves up to 5 million, up to 15 million. So the greater the exposure, the more the approving bodies and so forth. So our process can take 4 weeks. It can sometimes take longer because we find that the people come to us and they are not information ready, but we have concluded transactions in a 4-week program because then the clients were information ready. Where they weren't, it takes a little bit longer because we need to be part of enhancing that business proposal ourselves. In terms of interest rates, we've got a pricing model that we use. So it will say, what is the risk factor attached to this transaction? What is the likelihood that it will fail from an operational perspective, from a marketing perspective, from a legal perspective, or that the entrepreneur is not strong? So it then prices a risk premium. But it also then looks at what the empowerment dividend is. So what's the level of black ownership? Is there black management? Are there youth involved? Are there communities? What's the cost per job? Where are the jobs being created? Are we attracting foreign direct investment? Are we looking at priority sectors? And then it builds an empowerment discount. So our pricing on our loans is generally prime linked, but the pricing as it is on the agreement with DAC is that the DAC monies will come in at a fixed 5%, which we can all agree is much better than you can get at any bank at this point in time. Thank you, Chair. Give to
can we be clarified, Chair, on these institutions that are here? I think it's on page 48. When was the approval done? And those that are declined at due diligence, when was that done? And those that are on screening, when was that done? So that we're able to track the time that you take to approve the application.
So I'll give the detail that I can remember offhand because I can't for all the 34 transactions, but I'm more than happy to give you the dates afterwards, the detailed schedule. But I'll talk to the ones that we approved. Yellow Board Entertainment, we disbursed it now in January. It was approved late November. We did the due diligence late October. So you'll understand also there's a December closure and a January closure, but it was approved and committed, call it within 6 weeks. Tico Events also took about 2 months to completion, understanding the challenges that are highlighted about the timelines. Black Planet Trading Enterprise also had a lot of stumbling blocks in terms of contracts that needed to be unpacked. So when I send you that schedule, I'll also detail what the level of interaction was from an NEF perspective in terms of getting it once again to that approval stage. The other ones, I'll have to then give you the application receipt date and the decline date.
If I may talk to to the programs that we use to reach out. We've got a program that was mentioned by CEO earlier called Investor Education, where we go out targeting specifically the rural areas. That's when we build our pipeline, because we reach out to rural communities, targeting your cooperatives and targeting women, especially in arts and crafts space. And we've mentioned the number of lodges that we have, mostly there in KZN. So what we do normally is we, in every chapter, we do what we call forward and backward linkage. So we look for opportunities in our transactions. So these are lodges. So we look for an opportunity to establish a courier shop, and we when we build the lodge, we then said there needs to be space for the women from the area who are doing arts and crafts, and then we put that under what we call a social plan.
So for each and every of our transactions, especially those that are in rural areas, we look for those opportunities. And then we identified women in Jozini that are in the arts and craft space that are suppliers to the lodge. That most of the communities in those areas are shareholders in these lodges. Hence, we are saying we are funded as the NEF. So we created those opportunities. But over and above that, we've got regional presence in all the provinces. So you go to any province, we have presence. But then we proactively go out there and do business development. We don't just sit at the NEF and say, people like are going to come through the door because we have got an open door policy. We proactively go out there and find transactions. And if there are challenges, I can tell you that in provinces like KZN, we've gotten a number of applications that were handwritten in pencil. And we will take the initiative because our executives believe that we are meant for people even on the grass. So we go out there and we assist them to come up with proper bankable business plans. And we have come up with a business planner tool where we say, if even available in your language. So yeah, I think it talks to exactly your question to say, we don't just decline a transaction. We put effort to make sure that before we decline, we have applied all interventions available to make sure that the business, if possible, becomes a commercially viable venture.
And Honourable Chair, with regards to the tender that you mentioned, I think we'd be happy to look at that and see if it's something we can fund.
Okay. No, Chair, we move from the basis that the project have had serious problems of implementation. We fully agree with you. That is why evidence is there in terms of the rate of the uptick. So that is why these workshops were then held to find lasting solutions that as we start this year, we create avenues for people to know about the project. Two, for people to put proposals that are bankable and successful. The difference between NFV and NFVF is that NFVF is more about grant check. This one is about people who are entrepreneurs for either startup money now they need or for expansion of their programs. Now, but then they need a loan, but they can't go to commercial banks that are there no money because they will charge them exorbitant money. They will ask for requirements like collaterals that they cannot meet. And then that is where the gap analysis was made to say this one, we can then make people have access to this financing model at affordable basis, particularly for the blacks who have not had access through financing constraints and barriers to entry in the market because of that. But the project is more than a film. It doesn't cover films only. It's various sectors of arts and culture, which have been undermined. If you look at their presentation, the value of arts, culture, and heritage in contributing to the economy and employment, the potential is there, but it's not there. And how do we unlock that potential to create jobs and grow the economy? That is one of the contributions that I think was critical. Permissions, again and again from the department, I think here the main essence was there were elements in the MOA that we agreed must be reviewed without departing from the essence of the MOA, which were constraining, because this is a pilot. As you review, it became clear that the issues that the CO was raising had raised them even before, and are clearly things that we agreed. Currently, there is a team that we agreed they're going to be dealing with the MOA. Two, we agreed that the STEM committee is established and they will be meeting on bi-weekly basis for them to make sure that the projects are applications uptake is done and they check that there is progress and if there are blockages are addressed at that level. So that is what we said we will do in the meantime to unleash the potential that this project or this partnership has between department and NFVF. Finally, Chair, was the term, so under the MOA are these pricing models that they had raised to say, should there be a flexibility between 60 and 40? so that at some time they can look at that, follow their processes as they do. But also then on marketing, Jen, we agreed also that that is where the biggest weakness is. Because this is not meant for people who are already established. It's aimed to create entry opportunities for those who are out there having ideas, proposals, but are not having access. So Minister had asked the question, how does, I don't know why Eastern Cape is used more as an example, Chair, but Minister has used the comb, you're talking about your coffee bar. But Minister had asked, how do people know about this, as well as MGE in general, if we are not marketing properly? And that is why then we agreed that this team, one of the things that they're going to be doing now is to bring to us a clear strategy on how to increase the uptake of these ventures that they want to undertake, so that all applications, you rather have less rejections and more approvals. So we gave them that responsibility, that in 2 weeks time they should be giving us exactly that strategy, Chair, so that we can then be sure that the project, I believe, will be successful, is making it, and can make a difference. The potential is huge. We need this project in Mali and this partnership. We just to make sure that we unlock the challenges that it is facing currently. And I hope we will. I believe we will do that.
When you go to your slide, page 43, I don't know what you wanted to illustrate with this graph, but I think they are telling something in relation to your footprint throughout the country. What is that could be telling? Trying to tell something about your footprint, but I don't know why did you put them there. They are your GDP per province, I understand that, but also there's the employment numbers that are there. And I'm saying there's a higher concentration of your footprint in particular provinces. And if you are not staying in your offices, that reflection that is there, what actually does it mean?
Thank you for that. Those slides are to highlight exactly that there needs to be more work done to achieve provincial spread, and hence the DG even mentioned the discussions on this detailed marketing plan to reach everyone in the rural areas, in the township communities as well. So that is the whole basis of that. I think even stepping away from the Department of Arts and Culture as in the NEF, we have one of our focus areas is achieving regional spread. So we have a target to do deals outside of the three main nodes purely because of that reason. So what we're highlighting there is that the fund needs to go outside the main economic nodes and create jobs in those sectors, in those provinces as well.
And are we going to see that in your plan for the financial year?
Yes, Chair, you will. It sits in our balanced scorecard as the National Empowerment Fund, and hence it filters down to all the other funds that we manage, and that was the discussion we've had with the department as well last year.
Thank you. Just
Chair and Honorable Chair, this slide, this page 43, just that if you didn't go back to the global dynamics, this is a localized view on what the industry can contribute to the country on the economy, but also on fighting unemployment. But it's clear that there are provinces that are marginalized, which are not benefiting, both in terms of employment. If you contrast them, you'll see that with the GDP as well as of each province and then the employment, that there are areas that are not there. International standards will show you that in the UK as well as in America, the creative industry is in fact the low-hanging fruit to create jobs and to grow the economy. In fact, in both those countries as well as in Australia, the indication is that they create even more jobs for the young people below the age of 35, because that is where work is done. So this is indicating that currently there is an unfair spread and concentration in Gauteng, and they are the greatest beneficiaries of our processes, and that's what must change.
Since 2014, we are aware of this. We know exactly. And this is what we have been saying from 2014, to say you are concentrating in Gauteng, in Cape Town, in KZN, and the Northern Cape is the last province that you would go to. And even if you look at your institutions, your theaters, your go to Northern Cape, there is nothing. You know, so it's very important for you when you plan, you take this into cognizance to say there are these provinces, you know, that are down there, and it will take our planning to change their situation. So I think it's important. This is what we have been saying as the portfolio committee, and how we would illustrate it would be: Tina, we got into this apartheid bus. The apartheid bus is here. Oh, apartheid bus. We took the driver off, we jumped in, and we took the same route that part was going. We took the same route, didn't change anything. And it's so sad, after so many years, we're still talking about the same thing. So as the portfolio committee, we've said this from day one, and now we are going to day zero. We're going to day zero, and we have very little to show, Digi. It's a shame. Because, you know, this is our last year. And when we look back, we would have loved to see change. But we have to look for it. How nice would it be if when we look back, we say, wow, it was not easy, but it was worth it. You know? But we have to scrape for things that are going to make us, you know, to show that we have done some work during this year. So it's not good. Not good for anyone. Thank you very much, NEF, and I think, as I said earlier, the information that you have given us is going to assist even our constituency. My constituency, you said, hey, on your way to Alice. So we have constituencies that are out there that are in the villages, and we want them to know about this initiative. We want our constituencies to know exactly when they need help, where to get it. And as we get this information, we will take it to our constituencies. And we thank you. If there are any follow-up questions, we will ask the department. And is there anything that you would like to say before we execute it?
I just want to highlight the fact that we have presence in Kwazi. We have established a dairy farm and the community. Yes, the community are the first people to have
dairy. The dairy farm again.
So thank you very much, and I think you will find ways to engage, and if you have information, give it to us. We have constituency offices that can benefit from the information. Thank you. You are excellent.
How many can you? Thank you.
Honourable members, can we then proceed?
I want to see you in the board.
Can you talk give me your card.
Today we had wanted to share with you the public hearing report that we conducted last year. We had activities that we also having this year, which we called Language Activism Month. It's 28 days of language activism, advancing the language of the breast, which is the language of the mother language. This year we felt that before we started with everything, we would start by presenting the public hearing to you so that you can assist us in endorsing it. Then we can make follow-up and monitor if all the departments are basically following it up. This is basically the basis of who we are. We are established in terms of the PENCAL Act. Amended. Our main priority is to promote and create conditions for the development and use of all official languages of the Republic of South Africa, the Khoisan language and the sign language. We are meant to promote and ensure respect for all languages commonly used by communities in South Africa, including German, Greek, Gujarati, Hindi, Portuguese, Tamil, Telugu, Urdu, and Arabic, Hebrew, Sanskrit and other languages used for religious purposes in the Republic. We have got the following languages that you see as official, that our main function is basically to make sure that we elevate their status. they are referred to as previously marginalized languages. These are basically the bias approach that we've taken to make sure that we foreground for this official language. It obliges the state to take practical and positive measures to elevate the status and advance the use of this language. The basic principle that we've adopted and that we, the conviction that we've taken is that we need to ensure that we provide space for the previously marginalized languages to get into business, to make money, for people to like it, so that its value and cachet can be maintained within the country. It's basically within these languages that we have got lots of knowledges. There's no such an English plural form, but I'm just indicating the plural so that I emphasize the importance. Lots of knowledge is much about epistemology, it's much about oncology, knowledge construction. And currently, because we speak in English most of the time, we approach the world from a monolithic approach, thinking that knowledge is complete when it's constructed through the main language, mainly here, which is English. The introduction and provision of the space for these languages, for the previously indigenous languages, give alternative view to knowledge construction, indicating that knowledge construction is basically incomplete as we see it currently. Duty bound by our mandate, we judiciously invited all the national government departments of the Republic of South Africa, including the Office of the Presidency, as anchor for service delivery to all South African communities, to give an account of their observation of the Prescript of Language Act since its inception in 2013. We have been worried that it appears as if there's no focus, so there's no kind of political and financial will for all of us in South Africa to create space for the languages to get to the central place. There's an act that enables that, but it became a worrying point for ourselves. In our attempt to recapture our mandate, we felt that we needed to start having a conversation with the department, the national department, to see if they are basically taking this into account. The Constitution of the Republic recognizes, the main purpose of conducting public hearing was in pursuance of our mandate, as outlined in the Constitution of the Republic and the Penthouse Act, to monitor and investigate the observance of the constitutional provisions set for the South African languages, official or otherwise, and the use of Official Language Act No. 12 of 2012 by the National Government Department of the Republic. We started in this way. We identified the 42 departments. We invited all of them. We wrote letters, we made follow-up to ensure that they are going to be part of this hearing. 31 of the 42 obliged, 11 did not oblige. We got several kind of reasons for not appearing, and we documented them here just so that you can see that we're trying to be as rigorous as possible, and it's not much about hanging the TV in for public to see. It's much about holding people to account. We had the Department of Basic Education. The acting director was in the Eastern Cape on the scheduled date. He forwarded the department's language policy for discussion. It was not worthwhile discussing the submission in the absence of the department. Department of Correctional Services, we followed up, but there was no response to our invitation. Independent Police Investigation Directorate, no response to our invitation despite countless follow-up. Department of International Relations and Cooperation, despite telephone promises made by the department official, it neither attended nor submitted any document prior to the hearing. Department of Mineral Resources confirmed that there should be somebody who will be attending, but despite the reminder we made, nothing came forth.
You can, because we have looked at the presentation, you can just highlight in this that area that you want us to focus on as a portfolio committee, but we did get the presentation and we did go through.
Thank you very much. So basically those are the departments that could not come, they have got various reasons that they presented. But this is the expectation that we place on each and every department. We wanted each department to present its language policy formulated in line with the prescript of the Act.
We wanted his department to outline his language policy implementation plan to confirm the existence of language policy implementation structure, in this case the language unit, and delineate his role and positioning within the departmental organogram. To explicate the language policy implementation progress since the inception of UOLA in 2013. The procedures were as follows. Each department was requested to submit its individual language policy prior to the appearance before the panel. It was further requested to make PowerPoint presentations and respond to comments and questions posed by both the hearing panel and member of the public within an hour. The panel's approach was collegial rather than adversarial, preferring to encourage the cooperation of the invited. Each department was further encouraged to be honest and to take note that their presentation will be critiqued in line with both the constitutional requirement and the act in question. The recommendation made in this report will be binding upon being sanctioned by Parliament. So this is basically the breakdown of who came and what the department has presented. You can see what is captured there. The same thing that you see on page 13. Page 14 is the same. Page 15 is the same. 16. On page 17, what you see there is we try to put everything according to percentage to check the percentage of representation as they appear there for you to note. I'm taking you to what we found, which is the finding of our public hearing. The submission and the presentation made by the invited National Government Department alongside our subsequent analysis shows that very little has been done by government to give effect to the constitutional multilingual requirements and the provision of the use of the Official Language Act since its inception 5 years ago. Apart from the apparent lack of political will to promote South African official languages and inculcate multilingual ethos, there's a lack of understanding of why the promotion of all 11 official languages and status elevation of previously marginalized official languages are important. Almost all the department perceived UOLA and the multilingual language policy implementation as sheer provision of translation and interpreting services, rather than creating equitable space for the official language to grow and create value. Most departments admitted to not having done anything about the implementation of UOLA. There appear no inclination to allocate sufficient human and financial resources towards multilingual language policy development and implementation. They unequivocally displayed a strong predilection to default to English on the assumption that it is easier, logical, and commonsensically the only language inherently able compared to others. Practicability, as far as reasonably practicable, along with lack of insufficient budget, where the byline fronted frequently as the main reason that impedes the use of previously marginalized languages in departmental official business. A particular stumbling block is the process of developing proper multilingual language policy, the bedrock that nurtures linguistic diversity. It will be easy to simply blame the Department of Education for its Department of Arts and Culture for its formulaic work style introduction of policy templates to all departments, as it did in 2016. But all departments need to take full responsibility for not complying. What I mean there is that most of the departments were kind of blaming the Department of Arts and Culture, saying that they are the ones who gave us the template, but they only gave them the template. They didn't give them the language policy. And the template was meant to be used by each and every department to design a language policy. So that is basically where we had a little bit of problem, and we said they must take responsibility instead of passing the buck. Visually, all the departments slavishly followed this template and produced almost identical policy documents instead of developing multilingual language policies befitting their individual context. They merely restated the world. None of them devoted any serious thought to the following. One, the ultimate benefit the adoption of a more diverse linguistic framework will bring to their department and the people they serve. The linguistic rights of both the departmental clients and staff. The value of remedying the persistent linguistic imbalances in South Africa. The Parliament earnestly enacted this legislation for government to implement, but the latter as invinced by the position entailed abdicated their solemn responsibility. These are our recommendations. The government departments should construct acceptable multilingual language policy with time-framed implementation plan. Both the language policy and its implementation plan should be strategically biased towards the development and creation of business space for the indigenous South African languages. The department should in tandem make solid provision for sufficient resources to enable policy implementation. They should accord top priority to fully functioning language units with cogent executive standing within the department's executive and management committee. Here what I mean is that most of the time and most of the readings that we got during the presentation is that departments will place and give the language policy implementation to people and put them at the corner and say you merely translate. And when these decisions are taken at executive level within each and every department, they're basically seen as appendages and they don't have a voice that will force management or executive to ensure that the business operation of each and every department is taken from a multilingual perspective. The language unit should be a multilingual language policy implementation structure of the department and shall therefore not be limited to translation, editing, proofreading, and interpreting. They are meant to actively entrench multilingualism within the context of each department's business to enhance service delivery. The department should appoint professional and expert language practitioners well entrenched in multilingualism, language politics and related studies. Each government department should be dutifully bound to develop its own specialized multilingual terminology list and get them verified and authenticated accordingly. This is very important because we are saying most of the time that African languages do not have terminology. They are not meant to be languages of business and science, whilst we are specialists in, for example, in climatology, and having that department that do not have terminology translated in the African language. So we do have those concepts. We just need to ensure that these are basically created. Such commitment is very important that we make sure that these languages are given a shared. We will facilitate as personal language policy workshop for the departments of staff, management and executive on multilingualism, language policy and development and implement, terminology development and indigenous languages empowerment. This is very important. We are currently involved in the Language Activism Month, 28 days. We started by launching the languages, books that are written in African languages. We, in partnership with the exclusive books, made space for those books to be seen by everybody, trying to dispel the myth that we do not have languages in this language, we do not have books and material in this language. That's basically how we started. So during this course of the 28-month of activism, we will be workshopping the department. We have already sent invitations to all 42 departments so that they can come at our central point in a week or so time. We will be taking them through what language policy is, and they need to understand what multilingualism is, and we need to take them through what implementation plan is and what the function of the language unit is. But in all, we want to locate the concept of multilingualism within our democratic movement in South Africa. That this is part of decolonization. This is part of giving our language and our culture cachet that need to be shared with the rest of the world. So that's basically the reason why we want to do this. After the workshop with them, and after this house has endorsed the recommendation we've made, we would want to follow up and monitor if these recommendations are being carried out, and we will be writing yet another report so that we can gauge and check how we are doing when it comes to multilingualism in South Africa. We do not have a choice, do we? We don't have a choice because the Constitution demands that we do that. We do not have a choice because the previously marginalized, or just say marginalized languages in South Africa, are spoken by majority of all of us in this house. We do not have a choice. It is our joint responsibility to ensure that we ultimately create space. I would also put a challenge to this committee that maybe incrementally we need to ensure that we, as the chairperson has said, once or twice incrementally make sure that we do the presentation in our African languages. When you do that, you give respect to yourself, you give respect to ourselves and the Constitution, and you are making sure that our languages are basically going to be able to get into the space that was previously not given to them. It is very sad as we go along that currently when we do the go to church, when we pray, we always pray in English, as if God does not know it at all. When we buy textbooks, we buy Bibles, we buy a King James Version, and they are in majority, whilst the Bible that is written in English is not even bought by anybody. And when you do that, you're placing those people that are translating from English to Xitsonga out of business. And the, what we need to do is to encourage that this language are given space. I decided I might not be fluent in reading what I've written, and I wanted this to be a conclusion that should bring bear in each one of you. I decided to truncate the size of the font size of the English version and make sure that the ones that are in African languages are kind of highlighted for us to be able to see that this is very important. I will go on. Gore re tsinkelele seemo le boleng bja tsenyotirišong ya go le lemintši bjale ka ge bo theilwe ke molaotheo wa Afrika Borwa. If you could suspend the English version and just focus on this African languages part. Zwazeno, Afrika Tshipembe e khou ḓivha uri a huna tshithu tsho etiwaho tshi vhonalaho tsha u fa tshikhala kha nyambo dzo khatheledzwa dza muvhuso. Nangwe kuna milau ye itewa. Milavisiso ishi kombiso shotia lehi lavakantiyo mutiso waku tiinisela kahina kukota kuhumelela ikwa sa mapinza. Ntirisano na nkoka wa miana kanyo na ntelo ya tilimitleti. Mhaka ya kona i ku xana hi lava ku swi endla kumbe e loko hi swi endla a hi swi endleni hi ku hitiseka loko swi nga koteki hi nga swi endli swi ri swa hava hikuva swi ta veka Afrika-Dzonga na tikonkulu eka xiyimo xo ka xi karhi kahle. I might not be fluent, but it would have echoed in the languages that belongs to me. Lisa is a local Sisbotelela, Gokuchi, Blandele of Day, thank you. Blandele is Kokelo, Namasaita, Esizimisele Woy. Kungoko, Kes Faka, Intelo, Yo, oh gosh. Ukubeka esweni esweni ukuthotshelwa ukwezi siphakamiso se amasele siwa thwalise kuqanduva ngokwezenzo zawo. I try. Basically this is what we need to do. We need to learn all of us to show that we give space to this language to find expression within our own existence. Dear colleagues, that's how I end everything. Nobody basically got muscle by watching me working out. Ari Shumain, Toel, Kanimambo, Enkosi, Rolebo.
Thank you very much. I don't know why it's so difficult for departments to comply with the Act. And since I was from my private life, where we made department accounts from the previous position that I was in, the department put forward the fact that imali, but they have money to go overseas. Mm-hmm. They have money to do all the other things, but they don't have money for language units. And I would say, you start small. If a language unit needs 6 people, you start by employing 2 people. You've started. So I don't know why it is so difficult, because they do all these things that they want to do, but it's just the language unit that they can. And you know, it's really sad how government officials always look at how things cannot be done. That's how they do things. Just look at how this cannot be done. They don't look at how this can be done. You come in to say, I need this thing to happen. And they are looking at how it cannot happen. We need to change the mindset, DG, of the officials, the way in which they think. I don't know how you are going to do this, but it needs to be done. And this runs across all departments, where people just feel that, it's going to be very difficult. That's the attitude of government officials. And this is totally, totally unacceptable. We can't accept this, not anymore. So I think it's important for us to go back and look at how this thing can happen. I think it's very important for us to do that. And one other thing that we talked about in our last meeting was the fact that we need responsive officials. About how to respond. You know, when you ask a question, officials must respond. And Utat Mabaso, I want to commend you for doing just that, responding to questions. Because in a Sibana, you meet a person on the street, go here all day, I'm all. I think, that you apply with Department of Arts and Culture. And you're like, why not? Dal, then apply, Dal, the team up. And he responds to during holidays. He responds. And if he doesn't have the information, he'll say, I'll come back to you. And he will come back to me. And I respond to that person to say, but if you don't do that, you're putting this government in a very difficult situation. We need to have responsive department officials. And this we said in our last meeting. I'm going to give honorable members opportunity for questions and comments, but we want to comment. OPENSA was the first organization in 2014 that we visited. When we came back, we thought, it's an ICU, and we prepared a coffin for that organization. And this one is dying. Your oxygen is not going bad. But you've worked very hard. There may be problems, but you've worked very hard just to resuscitate that organization so that it can do what it is supposed to do. It can be in news for all the writers. Honorable member. Honorable Sule.
Chair, you have partly covered what I wanted to say. Because really where I'm sitting is a person who loves my language so much. Although I don't know whether which one is the father language, because we always talk of the mother language. Now you don't know whether Xhosa is my father language or the mother language should be Sotho, because I'm born of a Sotho mother and of a Xhosa father. Now it's confusing. Which we need to clarify which one now is the mother tongue. Should it be the Xhosa one or the Sotho, because my mother is Sotho. Between those people who are born between a Sotho father and perhaps a Xhosa father, or an African or an English one, we need clarity on that. And I think my children will also need the clarity, because I'm a Xhosa mother and their father is a Sotho. That was on a lighter note. But yeah, really, Pesalbo is bringing hope to me where I'm sitting, that our languages are going to be promoted, preserved, and otherwise, if we can move the way they are moving. I don't know how they are doing it, but I believe for now they are really doing a good job. Although it's a little bit disappointing, especially if you find a department like Department of Education, because I think for me they are the key department. Because they are tasked with the responsibility of making sure that the language is promoted through our children, the education of our children. And if they don't come to public hearings like these ones, it's really disappointing. We are in a situation in a country now where there are serious problems in terms of the languages in schools. We are in a serious problem where we need to transform even the South African Schools Act, the way it is crafted around the issue of language. It doesn't satisfy me as a person. If we really want to promote our languages, and that our languages as pale zihlala zikhona beyond ourselves. So Chair, I don't know what is it that we can as a portfolio committee try to do here in Parliament, because we are tasked with the responsibility of promoting also on the side of us as a portfolio committee, how we can engage with the departments on the matter of engage with other portfolio committees with the issue of the language, so that they can be able to talk to the relevant departments that they are overseeing. I don't know, perhaps really you whether in your chairperson's forum or whatever forum that we are sitting here, you need to raise this matter, because we can't still be doing with this matter now. We are almost finishing our term. We started with it when we came in here. I think the department did report to us 2 or 3 years ago on the matter. At that time it was even worse, because they did not want to cooperate with the department in terms of the language issue. So Chair, that's my proposal, that let's do something in this portfolio committee in order to make sure that we support PENSALP. So like you said, Chair, PENSALP, we opened with them in 2014 on a very bad note. So I'm sure we are going to close with them, Chair, in 2019 next year on a very good note. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Kropo, Tim Cook.
Hey, party is closer as it oligo. Chair, I thank you for the presentation. And maybe I should echo the words of my colleague in respect of this particular report that PENSALP tabled with regards to their efforts to get the Official Language Act on the road. And I think, Chair, it's an incumbent upon us, upon DAC especially, and also DAC input to the Minister in this regard, that we get the departments to comply. Because when we look at the incidences that happened at the Voorspoed Laar School and many other schools across across our country, that we have problems and schools being destabilized because of language. And the simple thing is that we do not enforce the language policy to see that it is implemented. Once we have that and people understand the need for it, I think we will have solved half of our education problems. And I think it's important that we need the deaf once again our way out and see how we can get a roadshow again going to see that this F12 of 2012 is being implemented in our country, especially in our tertiary institutions.
Thank you, Honourable Member. And you know, Honourable Melder used to say that you are going to be litigated. Departments are going to be litigated because they are breaking the law. This is a law. And when you break the law, you know what happens. So I think it's important for the department to begin to see it in that light. And I think what Honorable Suled raised, we have returned to the House Chairperson to say that he must communicate with all chairpersons that when they do their oversight, they need to look at the language policy as well. It should be something that they oversee as well. Does the department have a language unit? If it doesn't, what are the plans? So we've done that, but I think we need to remind the House Chair. And I don't know how feasible it is for us as the Portfolio Committee, following up on what you are saying, Honourable Zulin, that we would, as the Portfolio Committee, call a day of accountability for all departments to come before the Portfolio Committee to account. Because maybe when they look at Dr. Munareng, they see their colleague. They see someone that is their colleague and they can say whatever they want to say to him. I think let us plan this year to have a day of accountability on language, to have departments come before the Portfolio Committee, and Ucha will see how, will consult with Parliament how this can be done, and maybe give us a feedback, because I think this is very serious. And with the Department of Education, they do have, I don't know whether it's in the Eastern Cape, a mother tongue policy where they are saying that children need to be taught in mother tongue from grade R to a certain grade. So mother tongue policy, and they don't come to account to a pencil on that. I don't know what is actually happening. But I think the issue of language is very important, and I think it's something that we need before we leave, before we give our back to this august institution, we ensure that something tangible, DG, is done around this matter. Are there any comments? Because I would like to, on the recommendations that I hear, the recommendations that I hear, I think that can be done. And to have, you know, there are departments that have more staff than they need. People who play cards with the computer the whole day. And I think if you can try to find people within the establishment that are interested, because it needs interest as well. You can't take someone who is inclined in other things. You need to find people who are interested in language matters so that they can be retrained. You know, this is possible. But as I said earlier, you have officials that have an attitude that I can't explain. How can this not be done? That's their attitude. But I think this thing is not very difficult. It can be done. And I think the recommendations that are there, I don't see anything that can be done that is in this recommendation. We would like to follow up on this matter. It's something that I think in this remaining period is going to be on our radar screen. That cancer does what they are supposed to do in the manner that they are supposed to do it, so that at the end of the day, all languages are respected. And don't take your eye off Parliament. Don't take your eye off Parliament. You need to come in. This institution must account on how it deals with language. Hey, do you want to make a comment? Because I'm drawing to the close.
No, Chair, we welcome the report, and I think as you have honourable chair and members indicated, that we need to work together with the PEMSELF. I think that's what we need to do to make sure that we give them the support which we can, but also to just collaborate with them in getting the other departments, including ourselves, and having proper language policies, and so that we do not have a challenge of coming here and we are not talking in the same way. And I think that is the era that ourselves and myself and the CEO are working hard to ratify, because if they don't get support or we are not able to work as a team, it does create a challenge, because then how do we leave this room and speak the same language and to the other departments if we cannot support each other? So I think I welcome that, and we will work hard towards making sure that the work of PEMSELF is not only seen as a lone ranger by a professor running it, but that it is a collective responsibility for this country. Chair, if you do not have desire, you do not have writers of the language, if you do not have users, like a car, if you park it for too long, even if the engine was right, the battery dies, you can't start it. The power of language as a carrier of culture and a transmitter of culture is what we will work together. I don't know what happened, Chair. Provinces in the past were supposed to at least designate a minimum of about 3 or so languages in their province that are used as language of government to promote the use of these languages. And I think those are the things that we need to work together, because we've got other, as a concurrent function, get all the MSCs also, as well as HODs in the different provinces, to resuscitate this problem and support the work of PEMSELF.
Thank you very much. So in Benjamin Mac, Nala, I don't know if the Benjamin thing is a platform. As I said, Eugene, in our last meeting, I'm hoping, did you get the report on the last meeting? That was very, very harsh. Meeting with the chairpersons and deputy chairpersons of entities, them raising a lot of issues, and you're like, really? When I left that meeting, I was like, really? Because you find people who are asking, where does the power lie? Is it with the department or with us as the board? Really? At this day and age, you find people who are saying, how can it, if you are raising a point of them not meeting their targets, not meeting a target is not an issue, because you can set a target at one and then deliver two and say you have overachieved. So it's not an issue. Where you talk about their plans not being aligned with the plans of the department, they say this is a top-down approach. The department has its it has its plans there, and it wants us to fit our plans onto there. So it's a top-down. It doesn't happen that way. They need to take their plans from us. You know, such issues. And it's like, President Andoni, are you not talking? What is actually happening in your entity? And when I SMS'd you to say to you, give me a call, I was going to say, as the portfolio committee, we left that meeting saying, wow, I get ASEAN. What needs to happen is that we need, the department has to have that forum of those chairpersons and deputy chairpersons, so that you get a report, you respond to those issues that they raise there. It's important that you do that. Otherwise, the issues that they raise there will make you redundant, will make the work that you have to do redundant. We are ulwa, ulwe ute, we tell you, 5 years, you have to tell in general, 5 years, we can't end our name. So, reconvene that, and you can invite us so that we are able to say, and you know, why are they not saying these things to you? You can ask that question to us. Yeah, but why is it easy for them to raise the issues with us and not with you? If you are hearing guests for the first time, you know? So I think it's important for you to reconvene that meeting. You can invite us so that we actually say exactly what they said. The relationship between the CEO and the chairperson of the AA, they don't want to get there. But if you can do that, just reconvening, inviting us so that, because as parliamentary education, the value was, as we said, when you wanted us to postpone. And I think that is very important, and I just wanted you to have that in mind when you do your planning. And it can be good if it can happen before the end of the financial year. We'd like to thank you very much for the work that you're doing. And I've always said this, and I've been saying this even with the deaths of artists, hey, that have, you know, this year has been sad. We started this year, that won't be, and it just leaves a bitter taste in the mouth. But we are burying artists this day. And I'm saying that maybe when they interview me on the radio, I say it is because art and culture should be drawn to the center of society. Maybe this is why this is happening. Because it should be at the center of society, so that when we get all these things that we want, we are grounded. Because if we are not grounded, because if you're grounded, you know exactly where you want to go. But if you're not grounded, you will fall for everything. Anything that comes up, you fall for it because you are not grounded. So culture is that thing that grounds us. So I think it's very important. And we said it in 2014 that it's only the department of arts and culture that can show that can ensure that people begin to see arts and culture for what it is. You know, we are the only people that can do that, because the arts and culture, okay, all right, it's a by the way thing, but it's our duty to ensure that people begin to say, wow, we think this. We should focus on this. So we want to thank you for the work that you're doing. But as I said earlier, there is a lot more that needs to be done. And it needs activist officials, people who are going to be active to do the work that is supposed to be, they are supposed to do. We will communicate with you what Parliament says about the Day of Accountability, because we still have to look at how this can be done in trying to assist you so that the department can comply and not be before we leave, here you need to sing Happy Birthday to me. Yes, if you want to get one, you need to sing Happy Birthday. I'm joking. But on the 29th of January, I turned 60.
Wow. You look so 49.
So, and now I'm Usasa must come from here away so that I can feel the fun. And you can just take one of these and enjoy. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
Happy birthday to you.
Sorry.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday.